Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight. Tonight's show is about gaining compassion for humanity. And if you haven't heard this show before, it's about metaphysics and spirituality and a bunch of other things dealing with science and physics as well. And so hopefully you'll find the show to be interesting. And tonight, Gaining Compassion for Humanity is a show that deals with how we can stay in a position of being an advocate and a helper for the development of humanity in our world while recognizing, without being Pollyannas, the difficulties that humanity has been having and is having at the present time and may have in the future, yet still maintain the ability to be able to give and give in wise ways to those that have less of an ability to be conscious, therefore giving themselves. Okay, so I want you to think about that as a show topic while I give you the numbers to call in. You can reach us at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., and if you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Hopefully you would find that this subject may be interesting enough to call in if you want. Also today, I want to address something I talked about in our Sunday show on WDIS Radio. And that's out of Boston. For those of you who heard it in Boston, great, or the Boston area. If you heard it over the Internet, that's great, too. And that show was dealing with the solar crisis, the looming solar crisis that is supposedly coming to us. And I hope that I'm going to say his name correctly, Dr. Michio Kaku. I hope I said that correctly. At any rate, he announced some anomalies and problems that he's sees coming because of some mistakes that were made in measurement. And a friend of mine, Wayne, over in California, I'm sure you're either listening tonight or probably listen to the show later on, emailed me because he was concerned that I was implying something that I didn't think. I thought I had said something different, but if I didn't, I'll be clearer about it tonight. I want to bring this subject up first, and I'll bring it into how it fits into today's shop, a topic, Gaining Compassion for Humanity, because I'm sure that those of you who did not hear the Sunday show would like to hear about the potential impending solar crisis. And those of you who did listen, then this gives you an opportunity to rehear what I thought I said, but if I said it wrong, then I would like to correct that, of course. And that is that as far as the Earth is concerned, not other planets, not other places in our solar system, we could be having a problem in terms of the amount of solar radiation. These are charged particles that come from the sun. They travel at a million or more miles an hour. They're fast little particles. And our Earth is normally protected from them because we have a huge magnetic field that surrounds the planet. And it looks something like an American football. Of course, most of you know, if you're in the United States, what a football looks like. Some people in other countries might think a football is round. An American football is not round. So most of us, of course, in the U.S. know what a football looks like here. And if you can imagine, the football is the magnetic field that surrounds the Earth. And inside the football, right in the center of the football, is a golf ball. And we'll call that the Earth. The magnetic field is the football that's around the golf ball, if you can imagine that, okay? Got that in your head? And the magnetosphere, the magnetic field that surrounds the Earth, kind of blocks out most of the solar energy that comes directly towards the Earth by deflecting it. It deflects it to either go out into space, go around the planet completely, go out into space, or in some circumstances, some of the energy goes into the poles. But when it goes into the poles, it goes into the poles directly north and south into the poles and is relatively innocuous. It creates very little potential harm to the planet. And also satellites that are put up around the planet and also electrical equipment and other things that are sensitive to these charged particles, which create the borealises, are usually kept away from the very center point of the poles because there's like a hole there, you could say, that they could be affected by. Generally speaking, this is how the whole magnetosphere works. The magnetosphere also creates, effectively, what we call the ability for magnetic compassing, the ability to determine what direction is north and what direction is south, because the magnetosphere itself is connected to the Earth through a north and south derivative from the way that it is produced inside the planet. And relative north, relative south is determined by the inner workings of the outside core, inside core of our planet moving around and creating like a great big dynamo inside our planet, a generated field. Now, this field is critical, and it exists because this part of the planet is in a fluid state, and it allows there to be a more solid part, an inner solid part versus a more fluid outer part that allows there to be a highly charged generated field generated from inside the center of the Earth. So our magnetosphere really is created by the Earth itself. Very important, and it's a great, great system. It allows us to live in relative protection from this energetic solar wind. And generally speaking, the solar wind is on an about 11-plus year cycle in which it is fairly docile and relatively innocuous because there are very few sunspots during this period of time. And the solar field is in tune with the Earth by the Earth's magnetic field. The Sun's magnetic field. So it's kind of doing a little dance with the Earth, you might say. And it's a good thing because the Sun every so often, about 11 and a quarter or so million, not million, years or so, it changes itself and it reverses itself. And one is called solar minimus and solar maximus. Solar minimus is when there is a reduction in the amount of solar energy through magnetic production of sunspots and other factors inside the Sun, and there's an increase in factors during the maximus period, every about 11 and a quarter years or so. And so this 22-year-plus cycle, it's really 22 and a quarter-plus year cycle, is going on and off. Now, sometimes it's more intense than other years, other cycle years and changes, and sometimes it's less. And it could vary by as much as 2 to 3 times, at least in recorded history. There may have been events much stronger than that if we go back in time before. Now, all that aside, that giving you some understanding of how this whole system works, there has been an unusual, we'll say, human error event. And that is that we, on the Earth, have been measuring the Sun's effect on us in terms of its solar energy radiation effect based upon formulas that are basically incorrect by a factor of approximately 20 times. That doesn't mean that the Sun has changed. This is something Wayne wrote to me. It doesn't mean that the Sun has changed. It just means that we did not recognize that the Sun may reach a certain level of intensity that we supposedly should be planning on based upon another factor, which I did mention last Sunday. And that other factor is a very serious factor. It is this, that there are two things taking place. If you could imagine our football again, if you can kind of put it in your mind, okay, the football that is surrounding our Earth, the magnetosphere, not in where around exactly where the Earth is, but really a couple billion miles away from the Earth, in essence, is there's a dimple, there's a dent on each side of the football facing the Sun. And this And it's also carried over to the back side as well. It's maybe a little weaker on the front side facing the sun. And so consequently, this weakness in our magnetosphere is allowing holes to develop closer in towards the Earth, because the magnetosphere, in reality, as it moves closer towards the Earth, it becomes stronger. It's weaker as you move further out towards the outer edges, we'll call it the corners of the football, and it's not as strong in those areas. But the weakness is actually somewhere between the corner and where the Earth is. It's about midway. And that weakness is being magnified in holes as you move closer to the Earth. And two of these holes have become dominant, and they're quite large. They cover large areas of the Earth. And so, unfortunately, some of this radiation that's coming from the sun is getting into the Earth. But the real problem is that the scientists that were concerned to some level about this used the wrong formula to determine how much damage this would cause to Earth and our artificial satellites that are surrounding the Earth. And their conclusion a couple of years ago, several years ago, was that, oh, well, no big deal, because the amount of intensity of what the solar maximus is going to project to be, they don't really know what it will be, but just on an average solar maximus, won't be enough to make any difference anyway, so we don't have to worry about these holes, we don't have to worry about our satellites being damaged. No big deal. Problem is, it is a big deal, because they put up a satellite, the Themis satellite, and they put it up there to check out, just to make sure that our calculations were correct, and that for other reasons as well, to understand the sun's magnetosphere. And in the process, they discovered that our formulas were way off by 20 times. And so what's going to be happening is that we're going to be getting a much stronger dose coming from the sun. Not because the sun is necessarily getting stronger, although it may be as well. We don't know. As I said on Sunday, nobody really knows what effects the sun is having on itself as far as the other planets. But it definitely is going to be stronger relationship to the Earth, because we have a weakening in our magnetosphere in the areas that I suggested. And they're increasing. They're not even staying the same. Now, Wayne, thank you for, again, sending me the email. I will tell you the place to find where the magnetosphere is getting weaker and to what extent is in Scientific American in the last several years. Go back as much as 5 years, and you'll find all the articles that I know about it. In there, they describe this weakening. But the weakening is not around the golf ball, the center where the Earth is. It's weakening hundreds of thousands, even a million miles out there in space, where it is weakening at the rate of about 1% to 2% per year. But its effect on the magnetosphere around the Earth itself may be only 20% of that amount. So it isn't, we don't notice it as much where we are right now, but unfortunately, it may not matter, because once this material gets inside our magnetosphere, it may reach our satellites, and further, if our magnetosphere continues to degrade, it will reach the surface of the Earth. So this is a serious problem, because we are all being threatened by the loss of our civilization to some extent, by the destruction, effectively, of all of the technologies that we rely so heavily upon these days, but maybe 50 years ago we're not so concerned about. And it could also cause even damage to our bodies and reduce our ability to live long and healthy lives. It may increase cancers and do many genetic changes to life on Earth. So it's important to understand that what I'm describing is not necessarily a change in the sun as much as it is both a change in the Earth and some mistaken assumptions made by scientists in the last five or more years ago, who thought we were still okay because they used formulas that mistakenly interpreted the results that I described to you. Okay, so hopefully that makes some sense. I hope that this will also alert people to be concerned about what's going on in the Earth. I want to also add a couple of other things about this, and that is that, first of all, the Earth's magnetic field in general is lessening at about the rate that I described. If you took about 20% of 1 to 2%, that is the rate that our magnetic field is dropping in terms of the ability to even read a compass. And it's also the ability, the amount that it is starting to wander between what is called north and south true axis. So what's taking place is that our north pole is starting to gradually migrate to become our south pole and vice versa. And in the process, it will eventually become zero in the middle for some parts of Earth. That's not a good thing, believe me. And we are definitely moving in that direction. There is strong evidence to support this, again, in those articles that I suggested you look into in Scientific American magazine, which also gets some of its information from Science magazine. So you can look in those as well. Okay, and then the last thing I want to mention about this is that global warming may significantly increase. And if it does, we all could be in much greater serious problems. And the reason for the increase in global warming is that the same sunspots that increase the solar radiation also increase the temperature of our atmosphere, which has an effect on the entire atmosphere and reduces the amount that we have of room, we'll call it, to keep putting in more pollutants into the atmosphere that create greenhouse gases and are adding to the global warming that we might be doing at the present time, which I believe we are doing, by the way. And so that's a scary thing. So we have an added concern. Now, when is all this supposed to happen? The solar maximus is due sometime approximately after the midpoint of 2012. And there's a lot of people talking about 2012 for different reasons. I, being one who talks about it in relationship to a change and shift of rays, or energies that are focused on Earth, 4 out of 7 at a time. The third ray is changing at this particular time. That's the one that affects communication, civilization, you name it. It's the largest effect on humanity, the change of that ray to what is coming in, which is the fourth ray, but that won't be here for a while. In the meantime, we have this crystallization of the third ray, and a lot of negative effects from the changes. It's generally speaking a necessary good thing, but unfortunately, if humanity has darkened itself and is creating problems for itself through the misuse of this energy in terms of our senses and chakra, we create a lot of serious problems for ourselves. And this all is coming together, unfortunately, around the year 2012. I hope my explanation, which again was relatively brief, has explained my position about this. If I'm wrong, I am wrong. I'm stating also what a relatively famous scientist is saying about the matter, Michio Kaku. I always have trouble saying his name, but he's a great guy, and you can see him on the Science Channel on Sundays and many other programs as well. Okay, so let's continue on now with gaining compassion for humanity. And I want you to think about this. For those of you who have some concern about what everything I just spoke about in the beginning of the show, you might be saying to yourselves, well, maybe it's better if we all get wiped out or half the planet's gone or whatever from all these terrible things so that we don't have as many people to be concerned about. But people are part of all of us. We are all part of a unit. You can call that unit a kingdom, the kingdom of humanity. And as a unit, we live and die together. We suffer together. It's interesting as a perspective, because this is the perspective of a soul compared to a person. And from the soul's perspective, we are all here trying to do good. Some of us are lost and are therefore in illusion and are doing bad. And sometimes terrible things. You know, some of us are wantonly disregarding the environment. Some of us think that there's no problem with the environment. That just means we're an illusion. We're not necessarily selfish about it. We just don't believe there is a problem. Okay. But most people are self-focused to some level. And the amount of self-focus determines the amount of lacking in consciousness. Consciousness comes from being able to focus out on others and to give wisely to them so that they can do the same. And if we're going to try to change the problem and problems that I spoke about earlier in the show, each of us needs to gain more compassion for humanity. Those who are most conscious have to gain the most amount of compassion. Those who are least conscious only need to gain a small amount, if any at all. So it's very important to recognize that the responsibility is on those who are most capable to make the most growth, especially in gaining compassion. If you cannot gain compassion for humanity and you're a relatively conscious person, the result will be a significant loss in consciousness and great suffering, especially at this critical time. That's not a threat. That's only a suggested outcome that is likely to occur. And this is based upon causal issues. In other words, you become the problem. We become the problem when we lack compassion for humanity and we have the greatest abilities to make a change. We become the problem. And if you don't want to be part of the problem, then become part of the solution. And the first part of the solution is to gain compassion, which means to have an honest sense of caring and a desire to help to change those traits and qualities in our fellow human beings, even if they don't want to change. We're not forcing them to change, but we need to give them every opportunity to do that. That goes beyond the call of what we would consider to be normal. We have to go to extreme measures for those that have the greatest illusion because they are the least likely to change otherwise. And so we have to do some things that may be really challenging because it seems greatly unfair. I can speak from experience. I'm not talking about this as an outsider looking in. It really irks me to want to not want to give to people who I see as being extremely selfish, destructive, even evil. Giving to evil is a special condition. I'll talk about that later in the show. But nonetheless, even evil. So that I sometimes find it difficult to say, gee, I want to gain compassion for humanity, at least this segment, this part, this person, because they are turkeys. They're jerks. They're in illusion to the point where they're harmful, destructive to others, themselves, and everything else. They're ugly, they're nasty, they're all those things you can say about them. But those are the kinds of things that, strike me oftentimes, and I have to battle in myself, not always successfully, I have to tell you that, to gain compassion for those people. It's quite difficult. Now, compassion does not mean unwise giving. Compassion does not mean being a patsy. Compassion does not mean allowing others to be destructive to you, your loved ones, or anyone else. Compassion does not mean to promote or to allow there to be evil. Compassion does not mean to be in ignorance of evil, to pretend evil doesn't exist, or to believe, which is worse, that evil doesn't exist. Those kinds of things are not compassion. What is compassion? Compassion is exercising so much virtue in terms of the following, coordinating our responses with others so that they can integrate themselves with us in some way that's intelligent and that makes some sense. Giving to them in a way that lets them feel as though they are loved even though they don't get what they necessarily desire, and helping them to face truth in themselves and in others, even when they seek to create deception and lies. These are the things that compassion involve. They don't involve the other side, which I already described to you. And many people get this confused. They think compassion is being a sissy. Compassion is being a person who is stupid, blindly giving to those who would seek to destroy them. Some kind of more religious, in some cases, viewpoint by some religious standards, but not necessarily a wise position in the way people respond. The purpose of compassion is to bring people to a higher level of consciousness. If one is stating that they are seeking to be compassionate, and they instead lower the consciousness of those, particularly those that are the least conscious, who they're supposed to be trying to help, of course, and if they further lower those people's consciousness, then the result is not a compassionate outcome. So compassion is something very different, maybe, than what many people have thought of. And even as I can define this word, it's very difficult for me to speak about it, because there are times when, despite the fact that I know these definitions and I can teach them extremely well, I'd still like to take the baseball bat and club somebody over the head than to help them become more conscious. Maybe you have felt that way as well at times, particularly with those who are most destructive, who are most vile and evil. Okay. Now, again, I'm going to cover evil as a special topic, but even within that topic, compassion as a definition does not change. Just its methods, the methods of use, do. Okay. Now, how in the heck could somebody be compassionate if they have this angst and the sense of total, we'll say, vileness on the part of other people's behaviors and destructive actions, etc.? How can they have a sense of compassion and gain a greater one towards those others? What can they do? And the answers to this is a quagmire, but I can give it to you before we go to break. And the first thing to consider is this, that in order to be compassionate to the most vile of humanity, you have to recognize that behind every vile person, there either was or there still is a soul who created that person. And beyond that, there is eventually a God who created the soul, the God, the creator of our universe, who created that soul. Very important, because once you get that concept, and you can keep that concept in your mind and your heart long enough, you will, over time, it may take years, even become compassionate to the worst of the worst in our society and in other societies. You can actually develop a sense of compassion that goes beyond where you are today, where we are today, if that one principle can be applied. So I want you to think about that. We are going to go to break, and when we come back, I will give you much more information about this subject. I will also describe the paradoxical conditions of evil in others so that you can assess how to deal with those situations. And we will be back in approximately, give or take, about 2 minutes, about 2.5 minutes from now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And while we are off the air for the break, I think John from Missouri was calling in. John, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hi, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good.
Great, great. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a question. I don't know if you can answer. I don't know if I'm calling the right show.
But okay, go ahead.
I have a question. Do, like, evil spirits exist, number one? Are they dangerous to humans? And any more general things about, like, stuff like that?
Well, I think that's I was going to be talking about evil as soon as we got back from break, so I think that that is an appropriate subject. Let me, you can stay on the line for a minute and see if what I'm saying makes sense to you, and then you can comment about that, okay?
Okay.
All right, so when a human being, one of us, of course, decides to reject our soul on a consistent basis, and we do so for a long enough time, we can break contact with our soul. And we become in contact with, we'll call it like a group of souls, for all those who have chosen to be against God.
Okay.
And those souls that are against God want to destroy God's growth, which is life itself. It's like God grows from the life around it, and what evil wants to do is say, hey, I want to destroy this thing that's trying to control me. And in some cases, evil will even espouse that there is no such thing as God, but oddly, it also is in a fight with God. So it's kind of a strange position to be in.
Okay.
But that's the kind of evil I'm talking about. It's a really base, it's a really terrible kind of evil. It isn't just somebody who's done bad things. It's someone who really wants to destroy life itself, or at least the growth of life. That's another way to look at it. So life becomes some subservient food source for itself, so it can seek power from other life around it. That's what I call evil. Now, how does that sound to you? Is that what you think of as evil?
Yeah.
Okay, we're on the same page. Now, you mentioned about spirits, and to me, there is such a thing as evil spirits, and what I would call evil spirits are the following. That part of evil which is not necessarily incarnate. It's not running around physically with us, but it can have a tremendous effect on people that exist here but aren't themselves necessarily evil, but are, we'll say, possessed by this spirit of evil. And this spirit of evil wants those people to become more evil themselves. In other words, they may not be quite evil yet, but these spiritual forces, we'll call them, want the life that is physically alive here to become more evil and to unfortunately destroy us as well. So that's my understanding, and if it's your understanding, then I guess we're on the same page with it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, John?
I think that's, I don't have any first-hand knowledge, but Sounds pretty accurate.
Okay, well, then I'll tell you what. Why don't you listen? Do you have more of a question, or do you want to just listen in some more of what I have to say about the subject and how we can deal with it?
Well, my other question was, are they dangerous to humans?
Absolutely. There's no question that evil in general is dangerous to humans, and anyone that is possessed by it is in great danger.
Okay.
So I will describe what we can do about that if you want to listen to the rest of the show tonight. And you can always call back in, or you can email me or whatever. Okay?
All right.
So thanks for calling tonight.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye. Okay, so let me continue on, and thank you, John, for bringing up that subject. I always find it interesting that there's a lot of people who have a basic understanding of these principles. They don't necessarily have to define them in exactly the same way, but I think a lot of people do understand it. But there's also some people who think that evil doesn't exist, and that instead it's just a lack of us having a proper childhood, or maybe we had a mean parent or a terrible teacher, or we're just mistreated by society in some other fashion. And my suggestion is to think about that in a detached way. Isn't it true that all of us have some negative and terrible experiences in life, but most of us do not become objectively evil? We don't go around trying to destroy the growth of life and the growth of a creator. That isn't the normal way that people respond to those kinds of situations. Instead, it usually takes some level of possession by evil spirit, as John brought up, or it takes some really desire on the part of the person themselves to be evil, period, to want to destroy a creator because they have just an urge to be all-powerful themselves and to be antagonistic towards a creator who they disagree with certain principles on. Usually they have a mistaken understanding of those principles. And let me tell you about gaining compassion for evil. How can you be compassionate to something so vile that it wants to destroy life, wants to destroy its own creator, God? Well, the way you can be compassionate is to recognize that these beings, some of them aren't even by my standards human, and the humans that they may possess at times, are actually in a state of extreme illusion, extreme low consciousness. And although that doesn't excuse in any way who or what they are, there is something we can all do about it. And one of those ways, I'm going to bring up a little story of a fellow named Milarepa. Milarepa lived about 1,000 years ago. And he had a great teacher whose name was Marpa. Now, Milarepa was taught by Marpa how to deal with evil. Marpa told Milarepa, when confronted with evil spirits, literally spirits, who wanted to try to possess him and or destroy him, or confronted by evil people, he was to teach to them with pouring out the correct and, we'll say, the appropriate teaching to their acts of destruction, and at the same time allowing them to become trapped by his love. And sometimes the way they got trapped by his love is literally while he was in a cave one day, he was attacked by some evil spirits who started to bite on him and to claw at him. And he said, go ahead. Now, these were etheric, so they weren't actually biting into his physical body, but they were hurting him etherically, which eventually would appear as physical scarring and damage. But he let them do that while he told them how their steps in being evil would be destructive to themselves in the long run, and how God actually functions. He taught them about God. He taught them about virtue. He taught them about the things they wanted least to hear. He taught them also how they were being ultimately destructive to themselves, and they could never, ever, ever win the battle that they thought they could. And he explained how and why they couldn't. Now, I can't do that in today's show because it would take too long. But let me just put it in a nutshell for you. When evil people seek to destroy their creator, they themselves destroy themselves long before their creator could ever be destroyed. Ultimately, God stacked the deck. God allows us to be free in our choices, but at the same time, God also makes sure that no matter how much we choose to be destructive, we destroy ourselves long before any significant part of God itself is destroyed. It's the most interesting theory and the most interesting principles. So this is taught. This is what Milarepa taught to his evil spirits. And eventually they wanted to get away from him. They begged him. And he said, no, no, no. He was using his own mind to keep them attached to him, even though they were still biting in on him, but biting less and less as he taught them. And eventually, when they no longer sought to even be released, that's when he let them go. He didn't try to harm them in any specific way that was directly destructive of their thoughts or their feelings. He instead educated them and gave to them a different sense of reality. The reason they wanted to get away from him is because he increased their fear. They became so frightened by what he told them, and they knew so well what he was telling them was the correct thing, because he did it with such incredible love, even though he was not being what we would consider to be nice to them. They immediately became responsive to his message, even though they hated it, because they knew it was the truth. And before they left, they were different. They were changed. They were far less destructive. And they didn't come back to bother him, but they also, more importantly, which is what he was concerned about, they didn't go on to bother others as well. So this is a story about a great disciple, spiritual person, who lived about 1,000 years ago in China. And so when we look at the principles that this one man did, he showed us a way, a path, of how we can gain compassion for even evil, by recognizing that evil, when faced with truth that is overwhelming, even though the truth only hurt them, when faced with incredible fear, because they recognize that instead of winning, they ultimately are going to lose, then we are gaining compassion for humanity, for evil, when we produce these kinds of effects on those who are being possessed by evil and those who are objectively evil. Now, sometimes it requires force, tremendous force, because if you remember the story, now, Milarepa used significant force in holding these possessing entities hostage. Even though they started biting on him, he wouldn't let them go. They begged him. They said, "We won't come back. We'll leave. Just let us go." And he said, "No, I'm not going to let you go. You came into my abode. I didn't invite you in here, but now I'm going to teach to you. I'm going to teach you the truth. I'm going to teach you to be afraid of those things that you're destroying yourself with, which is trying to destroy your own creator. And I'm going to teach you about love." And he continued to do that until his results were obvious. So force is something that can be applied if judiciously used, and if used for the correct motives, here in the physical world. But he didn't force these creatures to either feel something or to think something different. He allowed them, through his educating and loving methods, and also forceful, to come to that conclusion. The only force he used was against their, we'll call it, physical nature. Although they were more etheric than physical, that's still part of the physical world. And he was only not letting them go, so to speak. Now, he could have done other things to them that may have been necessary, but at least he wasn't trying to force them to feel or think anything. And that's the difference between what he did and what evil does. Evil tries to get us to think and to feel those things which we may seek to not do. Evil tries to force us to do that. And he didn't, and I don't suggest that anybody who listens to what I'm saying tonight try to do that either. You can't force people to feel or think things that they choose not to. Instead, you have to educate them, you have to help them through your compassion to find these things for themselves, just as God does. We're trying to follow a pattern that God follows. We're trying to deal with a pattern that we can see in God, and we are trying to emulate that in our own behaviors and our own thoughts, trying to help ourselves to become something greater than who we are by emulating that which we see as a greater being than ourselves. If you're not seeing enough of God these days, which is understandable, because it's difficult to see God when so many things seem to be going wrong around us, then you need to work on gaining compassion for not only humanity, but yourself, and all those who need help in this particular time. The world is in a treacherous place. There's a difficult set of circumstances of changing around us, and we all need to have greater compassion for all the people that we come in contact with. We need to have compassion for those who are closest to us and those who are most distant from us. Because much is going on that's going to require this in order to hopefully change the present state of affairs. The reason the world is as messed up a condition as it is at the present time is because there's a lack of compassion, particularly by those who have the greatest ability and responsibility to grow their compassion. Remember, it isn't those who have the least amount of compassion that need to make the most change. It's those who have the most. This is a very unusual way of looking at it, but it is the way it is dealt with here in this world. And we can all make a difference. We can all change this world if we change ourselves first. If we don't change ourselves and we blame others, if we seek revenge and we seek to destroy others who we think are destroying the world, we will, in the long run, become the victims of our own hostilities. And I speak to you tonight as someone who makes this mistake on occasion. It is not from a tower looking down. It is from being part of this system and at times seeking a destructive outcome, if not directly in any behavioral sense, which luckily for the most part that's true, I don't do that. But sometimes my heart is not in the right place. Sometimes I find myself in a place where I would just like to pick up the bat and bang them in the head or do something else terrible because I don't see the long-range outcome. The long-range outcome is that we are all souls. Even those who are possessed by evil, even those who are evil, ultimately can go back to being connected to their soul, or at least to a soul. They can, and they eventually will. It may take millions of years for some. That's a terrible, terrible consequence, by the way. And for most, it'll take less than that. But it will take time. And it's something we have to allow some of these creatures to have. But we can still change most of the world by helping those who are not possessed by evil, because most people are not, to becoming more compassionate by us being examples of compassion rather than us being examples of intolerance and destruction and seeking to destroy for the sake of destruction rather than for the sake of creating truth, for the sake of creating wise love, wise giving, and for the sake of creating cooperation and sharing. If we can do those things, then we can make the changes in the world that are so critical and that will allow each of us to become participants in what will become a model for the future. Now, speaking of the future, let me just say a couple things about this. I say this for the end, because, and I'm looking at my time, I've got to address this right now. We are facing some difficult times, and some of those difficult times may include the following. We could have a terrible circumstance arise in the Middle East. The present time, the Russians have, in super stupidity, given additional weapons to the Iranians, which may encourage an attack rather than to discourage an attack by Israeli people. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying it's a great concern, particularly the next few weeks to a month. It's a great concern because they may feel compelled to attack before those weapons become fully functional. It's something that's a great concern, and if it were to happen, an even worse condition could happen. I don't know this to be a fact, but it is a worry that some of those weapons that were procured through the black market in Russia, nuclear weapons, about 100 or so or more, are missing. What if rogue countries, what if countries such as Iran, what if Iran itself has a half dozen of those weapons? We're so worried that they might eventually create a nuclear weapon. What if they already have a half dozen? Why have they been spending so much time trying to develop missiles before they even have nuclear weapons? So it's something to be concerned about. And what if Israel were to attack them because they didn't want them to develop nuclear weapons, and then Iran's response would be to attack Israel with one or more nuclear weapons, which would result in a terrible exchange and could lead to terrible conditions throughout the entire world. There isn't anybody that wouldn't be affected in some way by such an exchange. Something to be greatly concerned about. That's just one thing. What about a terrorist bomb? What about other things? What about global warming? What about a pandemic? There's a terrible amount of things that could happen. And we all need to be concerned about preparing for the very worst. Part of being compassionate is also being aware. It's also being understanding that terrible things may happen no matter how compassionate we are. Everybody has a responsibility to find the basics of life and to keep them close by, to make sure that they have the ability to survive in the worst of circumstances and to become beacons of light to those after such terrible things may happen who survive and need some kind of help. Remember, compassion is also part and parcel of planning for even the worst conditions in the future. It's not a state of paranoia, and it's not a state of hostility towards any one group or person. It's a state of making sure that we continue to exist here so that the creation, co-creation of our Creator in this realm, the physical world that we live in, will continue. That's the reason we're here. We're not here to just live out a good life and have fun or whatever. We're here for that specific purpose as a basis of all of our lives. Yes, we all have many, many specific gifts and things that we can contribute, but the very strongest basis is to co-create with our Creator here the light of its beingness. We're all here for that general purpose, or we wouldn't have a soul, and we do have souls. So I want you to consider that, and I want you to think about what I said. I don't want you to run off and say, oh, the sky is falling, you know, go dig a hole, we'll all crawl in. No, I'm saying be prepared. Prepare in a number of different ways. We can talk about this in future shows. But do so in a way which is not paranoid and which is not going to make more problems for people, but is going to reduce problems for yourself and others should the worst of circumstances come to bear on us, including the looming solar crisis which may come about. So think about all of that. Hopefully this hasn't been too negative of a show. I want to mention that on Monday, January 5th, Mimi, a member of the spiritual group I'm a member of, is going to be talking about the science of relationships over at Glendale Borders Books and Music from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. And we're in the Phoenix area. If you are going to be around Phoenix, even if you're just traveling through, if you can be there on that day, come and visit her from 7 to 8:15. There's no charge. And she will talk about the science of relationships, and you'll have an interesting discussion out there in Glendale, which is a little far for me to travel sometimes, but she makes the trip because she really wants to give and be compassionate to humanity, of course. So if you have that opportunity, please do so. Also, if you can, listen in on WDIS radio this Sunday. It's from 4 to 5 p.m. That's Eastern time. And if you're in a different time zone, of course, listen accordingly. And if you can, WDISM.com, over the internet, please listen to that. And, at the same time, of course, if you can't be in the Boston area, if you're not in Rhode Island or et cetera, Providence, Rhode Island, et cetera, then go ahead and listen in on that and listen to the show. It's live, and I'll be talking about the subjects just like I did tonight. So hopefully that will be your opportunity to hear me again this week, this coming Sunday. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.